Okay, Alexander, we have a European court decision which is saying that people in the army, people serving in the army, have to work a certain set of hours in a certain time period. And this is really pissing off Emperor Macron and the ruling class in France, if I'm not mistaken. What's going on with this story?
Well, it's an absolutely bizarre story, and it also shows you again the extraordinary overreach of the European Court of Justice. Anyway, they've just given a ruling which says that the military within EU member states is subject to the Working Time Directive. So that means that soldiers are not soldiers as such, they're employees, and they're therefore subject to individual timekeeping, severe limitations on night work, rigid activity planning, including prior agreement from each individual to any change, precise calculation of time off, mandatory 11-hour daily rest time. Now, that I can accept is perhaps something you might want to do in an office or a factory or whatever, but armies don't usually work like that. Armies are subjected to discipline. And they, of course, aren't really in a position to operate in that kind of way. And the court did accept that there are certain constraints, such as when the military finds itself in situations where it's conducting exercises, for example, and things of that kind, that at that point, there can be derogations from the Working Time Directive. But in all other respects, military people are basically to be treated as employees, simple employees. Soldiers are to be treated as employees. Anyway, this has caused uproar in France, and I should say this arises from a French case. The Ministry of France for a Defense has condemned it, and they said that they will go on and look for ways to keep up the fight in both in the domestic courts and at EU level. There's been a very strong article about this appearing in the French media, written by Jean-Louis Borloo, who is a former finance minister under Nicolas Sarkozy, and who is, by the way, a staunch Europeanist and a member of the mainstream. And I fully expect this to be a big issue in the forthcoming election.
Is this all related to the desire to get some sort of EU army underway?
Yes, I think it is. I mean, this is all again part of the centralizing vision of the EU. I think partly it's about a European army, but it's also about the European Court of Justice wanting to extend its reach into every area of life, even areas of public life. So if you think about genuine militaries, and that France has a real military, and one which is very much a powerful institution within France, and one which, as we know, already has a difficult relationship with President Macron. They will see this as an attempt to undermine them by the European Court of Justice. In other words, to disrupt discipline, to mean that officers can't, order their soldiers to do X, Y, Z, because if they do, they might find themselves up against our courts because they would have breached the Working Time Directive. So, I mean, think about that. Think about the bureaucracy this would cause. You'd have to sort of do all of the various steps and regulations you see in offices or other workplaces. It'd be extended to an army. It's very difficult to see how discipline could function in this kind of situation. And I'm pretty sure the officers will feel that this is another attempt to undermine the French military. It's come from the European Court of Justice. Whether they will see that as an attack on them by the Europeans who are trying to sort of undermine the French military in order to create in its place a European military, I don't know. But I suspect that many, many French officers and many French soldiers will blame Macron for this, and they will say, "You're always preaching more Europe. Look where that is getting us."
Right. Is the European court above the EU member states' own high courts. I mean,
absolutely.
I can't understand which ones.
No, the European Court of Justice is absolutely clear about this. Its decisions take precedence over those of domestic courts. So the highest court in France, according to the European Court of Justice, is subordinate to the European Court of Justice. So if the European Court of Justice decides to extend the working time directive to the French army, then if France is to remain a part of the European Union, then its domestic courts must implement this decision. That is how EU law is structured. The European Court of Justice is supreme on any question of European law.
Yeah, all the member states signed up to this when they became members. In other words, they not only gave away their fiscal power, their monetary power by joining, say, the euro currency, the ones that did, but they also gave away their legal power as well. This was a sticking point for the UK, if I remember correctly, as well.
Absolutely. Now, can I just say, because you've actually touched on a very interesting point, because there's now actually no treaty. None of the European treaties give the European Court of Justice this enormous degree of power that it has given itself. It assumed that power in a court decision it took in the 1960s. It said, we are the court of the European community, as it then was, and what we decide on any question of European law is binding on all member states. So it's a power it gave itself as a result of a court decision. Remarkably, that court decision was then accepted. And of course, the Commission in Brussels insists that it be implemented and followed by all member states. There's been occasions from time to time when individual countries seem to be prepared to rebel against it, but they've always been intimidated and deterred from doing so. But you're absolutely right. For the British, it was a sticking point. They said, we are not prepared to allow our laws, our domestic laws, to be governed for us by a foreign court.
Yeah, well, now they're dictating how militaries should act in member states.
Absolutely.
It's just getting out of control.
Absolutely, organize their own affairs. I mean, bear in mind, I mean, there's always been a tradition that there's military law to which armies are subject and which take into account discipline. And there's civilian law, which applies to everyone else. Well, what the European Court of Justice says is you apply civilian law to the military and we decide what that civilian law is on the basis of the Working Time Directive. So they are extending their reach to cover the military as well. And not just, of course, in France, because this decision is binding on all member states. So it applies to the German military, it applies to the Greek military, it applies to the Cypriot military, it applies to the Italian military, it applies to the militaries of all EU countries.
And how is this coordinated with NATO? Because when you talk about the militaries of some European countries, I mean, they're pretty much non-existent. I mean, they're not going to stop any competent large armies or militaries, aggressive militaries, from doing what they want to do. It's NATO essentially that provides the military cover for the European Union. Yeah. How is all of this connected to NATO?
Well, I mean, you can see the same philosophy is now being applied to the most important military in NATO of all by far, which is the US military. You have the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff going along to Congress and telling Congress that, you know, it's all these things, all these concerns, all these identity issues are now the major priority for the American military also. Now, I would stress they haven't gone so far yet as to say that, you know, civilian law applies to the US military. But if you take one theory, then you could, if you, you know, take one issue, like what General Miller said, well, you can apply to everything else, seems to me. So we're going to see across the West. I mean, this is inevitable. I can't see how this can be avoided. A steep decline in military discipline. And bear in mind that, you know, one reason why many young men especially, but also some, you know, young women, join the military is precisely because they see it as a different class with a particular esprit, a force that serves the nation. They have a, you know, they have a particular connection to the military, which is different from what you would find that any civilian employee has for any civilian company, because the military have always been acknowledged to be a class apart, but not in the opinion of the European Court of Justice and not in the opinion of General Miller. The Chinese and the Russians must be laughing.
Yeah, that's the point that I want to make now. Is it fair to say that the West has just decided that the military's purpose is not to protect the country anymore or to go fight wars, to kill people? That's what a military is there to do. They're trained to kill. They're trained to defend, to kill, to protect these things. Is it fair to say that the West has kind of said, you know what, let's just turn the military into another bloated institution? You know, just like, say, the Fed, the health ministry, the finance ministry, the EU, and all of the Brussels stuff. Let's just turn it into another bloated institution where we can suck on the of taxpayers, drain their money, enrich ourselves, and let's turn it into another another elitist institution. Who cares about protecting and serving the countries? Because today we have drones and we have unmanned aircraft, and we have nuclear. Some of us have nuclear weapons, and we have all this other stuff, and we have information and cyber attacks and all these other things. So we really aren't going to have a need. This is what they may be thinking. We really don't have a need to actually, you know, put a person to sit in a fighter jet to actually go somewhere, or soldiers to actually protect something. Hell, even borders now are just being, you know, flung wide open. So we really don't need that either. Is this the plan? And China are just kind of saying, okay, if that's how you guys want to play this, let's see how it works out.
I think it is the plan, and it is the belief, the idea that war is now so technological that you don't really need soldiers. And bear in mind that, you know, again, we have to be careful what we say here, but, you know, the culture, the predominant culture, certainly the one that is embraced by many of the powers now, is basically antithetical to what you might call the martial virtues, the virtues of young men and going to fight and, you know, taking up arms to defend your country. It's not something they really feel very comfortable about at all. You only have to listen and read and hear what they say to understand that. So absolutely, make the military a big bloated civilian institution, have lots of fancy weapons, you know, throw fancy weapons at it, many of them probably only working to a certain degree. And of course, if you have a military like that, you tell yourself, well, you're both secure and you're also at the same time weakening those aspects of this institution, which for cultural reasons you despise. But the reality is the war doesn't work like that. I mean, look at what has just happened in Afghanistan. There you had a ragtag army of insurgents armed with light weapons, and they took on this great technological military, and they've outstayed it, and now it looks like they can win. The fact is, armies need soldiers, and without soldiers, they're not armies any longer, and they can't function. And this is something which some people in the United States have complete, and in Europe, this is a story about Europe, even in France, with its great military tradition, they seem to have lost. And if you're talking about the EU combine, well, of course, as I said, they are totally antagonistic to anything like that. They don't like national armies anyway, because national armies are symbols of the state. And as we've said many times, they don't like states, because states fundamentally are antithetical to the whole EU project.
Can you also make the argument that perhaps they don't care about militaries in the sense of militaries fighting other countries, because what they're looking to do, when I mean they, I mean the globalist project, what they're looking to do is to turn the military, portions of the military, in on their own country and to act as a parallel police force. So certain parts of the military is just going to be used to police the people living within their own borders, because the plan is to move towards some sort of globalist authoritarian system, surveillance, globalist authoritarian system that, you know, like you said, the state is irrelevant. There are no borders. It's a one world type of government. But we're going to need a part of the military to function alongside the police, and not so much as a force that takes on another country or goes into combat in faraway lands. We're going to need them to just act domestically. We are kind of seeing that in a way in the United States and in other countries, where the military has kind of acted as a parallel arm to the police force. I mean, we are seeing that pop up here and there in certain circumstances. So maybe that's another part of it, which is, you know, we don't need the military to go to Afghanistan. Forget about that. One world government, no borders, no state, no culture, no religion. But we are going to need people to enforce that internally in each country.
Well, I think there may be some people who think that, and I certainly think that they are increasingly looking to the military to try and fulfill that role. Though I should say it's a role that traditional militaries hate. I mean, they dislike intensely being made to fulfill a public order role against their own people. It's not something they are traditionally minded to do at all. And those militaries that get involved in politics tend to become very demoralized very quickly. So, you know, that's a warning thing. But of course, you know, I agree. I mean, you know, they do want the military to fulfill that kind of role. They want it to be politically reliable, because obviously they're worried that people with, you know, martial ideas might actually have different ideas. So they don't want people like that in the military. They want the military to become a kind of reliable, service that they can use, and which is comfortable with their ideology, and which they can rely on in the event of a crisis. But of course, they also want to extend their ideas around the world. So all the indications are that far from wanting to scale back their interventions, they want to intensify them. And for that, of course, you need a military. But, you know, you're not going to get it if you demoralize it in this way. You can have all kinds of drones and machines and technologies, but ultimately they won't help you.
Yeah, they may be thinking, we'll use the drones and the machines, the technologies, and the cyber weapons and the financial weapons, the sanctions, in order to extend our control further. But internally, we'll make the military like, you know, working hours, and, you know, you clock in and clock out at these certain times, and just turn them into another police force. That's the way this law sounds to me. Why else would want this law if it's not to remake the military into some sort of a domestic, you know, this is my job. I'm going in at 8 and I'm leaving at 4, and I have 1 hour lunch break, and that's that.
I know. I mean, what I would say about going back to this, I mean, you know, the thing about over-reliance on machines, Churchill put it very well during the war: a military that relies on machines is going to be defeated by a military which simply counters it with its own machines. So, I mean, you know, it's not a good thing. It's soldiers who win wars. I'm sure there are people who have the agenda you say, and I'm sure that this court decision is part of that. But fundamentally, this is part of the general move within Europe to centralize decision-making in Brussels, to undermine state institutions. And as I said, there's no more emblematic state institution than the military, and to extend the reach of the institutions of the European Union, in this case the European Court of Justice, into every part of national life. So you say that the military of France is subject to the European Court of Justice and to the European Union's Working Time Directive. So it has to follow a body of European law distinct from French military law. And I think that's what it's all about. I see this primarily as an EU centralizing measure.
Yeah, what's to stop Ursula von der Leyen, the minute you have this in place, what's to stop her from getting to the podium and say, I order the French military to do this?
Well, we haven't got there yet because she doesn't have a defense. I know that's where it's moving. But of course, the kind of military she will have by that point, judging by this law, will be a shambolic wreck.
She was a knockout success during her tenure as the German defense minister. I say that sarcastically. She was a disaster.
Absolutely.
And she still got promoted.
Absolutely.
All right. Okay, guys. Go to our locals. Go to Super U, Odyssey, BitChute, Rumble, and check us out on the Durant Shop. 10% off when you use the code REALNEWS.